Once again, my name is Matt, and I'm an addict. Welcome to the Step 8 Forgiveness Workshop. And we have the reading of We Do Recover. If somebody would like to come up and read.
Hi, I'm Dennis, and I'm an addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts have ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Hope, from the Poconos area of NA.
I'm an addict named Hope. I'd like to thank the God of my understanding for another day clean and for getting me out here to beautiful Camp Harmony once again this year. And I'd like to thank this committee, this weekend retreat, for having the belief that I might have a message to share out here. So I'm going to do the best that I can on step eight and try to speak a little bit on tradition eight. But step eight is we made a list of all people we had harmed, and we become willing to make amends to them all. And like I need to say, right, like I lived and I put myself and I believed for many years that I was a victim in all areas of my life, all my life. I thought that anything that happened to me in my life was not due to anything that I said or did, but it had everything to do with everything that you said or did. And so I had a really hard time when I came up in here, right, taking personal responsibility for my own actions, my own wreckage that I had created. And it says in step eight, right, that there's some things that I have to do first before I move on to making a list, and that is like getting honest with myself on a real deep level, right? Finding out what my part is in the areas that I struggled with, in the areas that I caused a lot of harm over a lot of years to the same people over and over and over again, and sometimes that people included myself. Right, and I have to say that, right, because I get really emotional about Narcotics Anonymous, right, because I have a lot of passion and a lot of compassion. It saved my life. It saved my children's life, right? It did all that, and it continues to do that on a daily basis, right? But I want to share a little bit about me, right, and how I got here. I didn't come in here saying, hi, I'm an addict, my name is Hope, right? I came in here saying, hi, I'm Hope, I'm her mother, and I'm here to support her. That's how I got here, right? I didn't get here because I felt that I was an addict, because my interpretation of an addict was completely different than what I know it to be today, right? I thought because I had a job, I had two jobs, I kept that roof over the kids' head, put clothes on their back, fed them, and had diapers, that I was not an addict. That's not what addicts do. You know, well, needless to say, after I came in here and I got a sponsor and I started following some directions and find out who I really was, right, putting the focus on me, not you or anybody else, but keeping the focus on me, that I found out that I am an addict. And someday, after a little bit of time coming in here, I was able to say, hi, I'm Hope. And I think I'm an addict. And then it went from I think I'm an addict to hi, I'm Hope, and I am an addict. And today I say I'm an addict, my name is Hope. right? Because that's who I am. I'm no longer getting to my list, right? Like I had to get real with myself. I really, really, really had to dig deep, right? Because I wanted to be the victim, man. I did not want to admit anything that I had done to anybody, including myself, ever. Because in my mind, that would be, I don't know, in my sick thinking some way, it made me feel weak, like a failure, like not worth anything, or, you know, just made me have a lot of different feelings inside that I didn't know what to do with. And like I said, it had caused a lot of people harm, you know, and it started way back when, you know, I started causing myself harm by doing things to fit in. And it didn't matter, like, I had to do these things at all costs because I wanted to be a part of. And that's where it all began for me. All the harm started then. And it has taken me to great places, from a wooded area with a 48 bottle of beer, right, to a small bedroom in my home using with my two children. Okay, so that's where this all took me to. And I don't say that up here like I'm not proud. Like I need to say I'm not proud to sit up here and tell you that I used with my children, right? Because that's a part of the harm that I need to talk about. It says in our literature, right, that sometimes we harm people, but we don't know the extent of the people that it branches out to harm, right? So when I was using with my children because my disease had me believing that they were better off using in this room with me than they would be out on a street using with strangers or getting strange stuff from strange people, you know, it was better for them to use in this bedroom with their mother using that same strange stuff from strange people. You know what I mean? And it sounds like it's crazy, right? But I was crazy, and I'm still crazy, but I'm getting better a day at a time, right? Because I keep coming back. Just keep coming back. And I don't use no matter what. So, like, that was one of the things that I had to make amends for, you know. So I had to get honest with myself, you know, and see my part in it, you know. And I had to admit to that part, and I had to get with my children, you know, because I'm currently actually in my ninth step, right? But it says that we do an eighth step without thinking about a ninth step, and my sponsor had to constantly drag me back to the eighth step because I was constantly, to the eighth step because I was doing my eighth step work, but I was going into my ninth step, and I was like, well, how am I going to make, like, because you know what, like, right, here we go, right? I used to leave my children alone. I told you I had to have it at all costs, right? Because, like, I was afraid I was going to miss the click across the street, right? So, like, one day my one son was in school, my youngest son was in bed, and he didn't wake up yet, and he was, like 6 months old, and I didn't want to wait for him to wake up, so I went across the street. My intention was to go across the street, do my thing, come right back. Well, it says in here, too, that our intentions sometimes don't end up to be our real intention, right? And so by the time I got back, because, like, I lost all trains of thoughts of time, and by the time I came back, I found my son, Harry, and I call him Harry today, convulsing in his crib. And that's another amends that I have to make, right? Because, like, my part is I left my son alone. And for the longest time, I never shared that with anybody. I never told anybody this until I came into Narcotics Anonymous. And then it wasn't until I was here a long time, right, and got some trust in that other woman, my sponsor, right, that, like, if I shared this truth, right, she wasn't going to cart me away or have me put away or think of me differently or, you know, like when I was done telling her this, she was able to walk me through a process that allowed me to make amends to my son, as a matter of fact, Harry. Because when he passed away, I never acknowledged his death until until like 3 years ago, and he had passed in 1981. And I just acknowledged his death 3 years ago, and that was through the help of my sponsor. And then she walked me through the process of making the amends to my son, the living amends to my son, and continues to help me maintain my living amends to my son Harry today, right, by showing up for my other children and for my grandchildren. So, you know, I left Harry alone because I wanted to go and do my thing. When I came back, he was convulsing, and he went into a coma, and he came out 6 months later with 3/4 of his brain damaged and cerebral palsy and real low immune system, you know. And then when he was 2 years old, I was in and out of the hospital with him, you know, and I had my mother-in-law telling me, you know, that she couldn't love it. Like, she would walk right past him and go to my second son and say, "Hey, my man," and tell me things like, "I can't love him anymore because he's not normal anymore." And people had a hard time dealing with his death. You know, people deal with it death differently, you know. So, like, I was alone through this whole process with this sick child. 24 hours a day, holding him 18 out of the 24 so he wouldn't cry. One day, somebody had talked me into going to my brother's birthday that was being held at my mother's house, and my husband didn't want to go, so he stayed home with the baby. And while I was there, I kept hearing him cry. I kept hearing Harry cry for some reason. And when I came home, he was crying, and one of his pupils were so large that you couldn't even see the blue color in his eye anymore. And when I took him to the hospital, he flatlined twice, and And I got the call. You know, they brought him back, and they talked me into going home so I could be with mother, son. And for the first time, I went home, and then they called me at 8 o'clock in the morning and said, "You need to be at the hospital." And that's when I found out that he had passed. And it was brutal. It was really brutal. Because I was angry at everybody else. I was angry at God, right? I blamed God. I blamed the hospital for talking me into leaving when I knew better. Like, I blamed everybody else, you know, and the reality of it was, like, I was tired. I was tired. I couldn't do it alone anymore, and I needed a break, so I took that break, you know. So, like, I never went to his grave because, you know, I was still using, and, to do a stone at my son's grave would require me to spend some money, and money that I didn't want to spend, right? So I went a long time to the cemetery to see my son and what I thought pay my respects to him, and I stopped going after a while because, you know, the cemetery grew, and he was in a section of just babies, you know, and he didn't have a stone, you know, so, like, you know, as you know, the cemetery grew and more babies were buried there. I no longer knew where my son was buried, and I couldn't bear the guilt and the shame of not knowing where my son was. So I stopped going. And then I made it to Narcotics Anonymous years later, you know, and I shared this story. And my sponsor, who's my sponsor today, was just a friend then, but she, you know, we were outside, and I started talking about this because it was cold. And his birthday had just passed, and then February was coming, which was the month that he had passed. And I was just, like, all twisted up. I didn't know what to do with myself clean, man, because I used behind these feelings for a long time, man. I used behind my son and his death and the feelings that I was feeling, because I didn't know what to do with them. Nobody wanted to talk to me about it. I would be shut down, you know, real quick because they didn't know what to do with it or how to deal with it. And, you know, so I always had to keep it into myself. And so my sponsor, who wasn't my sponsor then, you know, listened to this whole story out in the cold, and it was so nice to be able to share the truth about what happened to my son to the first person in my whole entire life, you know, that it just, once I started talking, it was just like throwing up. And we were there for so long, and it was so cold, I'll never forget it. And then, like, before you knew it, like, I didn't feel the cold anymore. right? Because all I could feel was like relief, right? Because now, right, that it's out, I could do something about it. Now I can make amends. I could do something about it, right? Because it's out, and I can no longer deny that my son is dead, right? I have to do something about it if I want to move forward in my process. So she walked me, you know, she took me, she spoke to her sponsor that night, and her sponsor told her that she needed to take me by the hand and walk me through this process, and she did. Literally take me by my hand and walk me to the monument place. We bought a monument. She kept it simple for me. We went across the street. She prayed, you know, about it and with me, and I went home, and for the first time in my entire life as a mother, I felt like I did something right as a mother, right? That was the first time, and it felt so good that I wanted more. I wanted more, you know, not because it felt good, because I'm an addict, and we want more, and it felt really good. You know, I wanted more of whatever that was that happened just now, and that was the first piece of evidence for me that this works. That was the first piece of evidence. You know why? Because like when I left, I didn't use. I didn't use. I went home and I didn't use. I didn't think about using. I didn't use. You know, I didn't use over the very thing that I used for so many years. You know, so that's one instance. So I had to make amends, and that's how I made amends. I bought him a stone and I could go visit my son, Harry. And before that, it wasn't Harry. He wasn't my son, Harry. He was like my dead son. My son passed away. Like he didn't even have a name, right? He didn't even have a name. So I gave him his proper burial, and she helped me through that. And that was my first amends, you know. And that was way before I got to the ninth step. But I've learned in this process, right, that you don't have to be on any particular step for it to present itself in your life. And if you don't work the steps, they will work you. You know, and I truly, truly believe that. So, like, this was way before I got to the ninth step. And by the time I got to the ninth step, it wasn't nearly as hard to make my amends with Harry as it was, you know, that first initial step of doing it when I wasn't even on this step. The second thing that I had to make amends to was like myself. I make amends to myself, right, every day that I don't use, man. I make amends to myself. Forgiving, you know, it says in here that we learn how to forgive. That's what the step is, forgiveness, right? We learn how to forgive others, and then we learn how to forgive ourselves. And for the longest time, I didn't know how to forgive myself, man. I used a long time because I didn't know how to forgive myself, you know. I knew all the things that I was doing was totally wrong. And yet I couldn't stop myself. And, how I make amends to myself today is like I take care of myself today, right? I take myself to a doctor. Like, I would put so much toxics in my body for so long that my body is actually breaking down now. I have a really bad lower back. And I have to take myself to these doctors, and I have to do all these different things like epidurals in my back and nerve blocks and physical therapy and all these other things that I don't want to do because it's more painful when I leave there than when I got there. But I do it, right, because later on the relief comes. Like today I could tolerate my back. I could live with my back. Like I don't have to live on narcotics, right? I could tolerate my back. Today I'm grateful that I could just walk, right? Today I could have that gratitude that I could just walk today. And if I could walk today, it's a good day. It's a really good day, you know. If I could stand up here the way I am right now, it's a really good day. So I try to make amends that way, you know, to myself. To my children, I make amends to my children. Like I made my amends face to face with my children. Talked to them, like when I made my amends with my children, I talked to them about like my part, what I did, how I didn't show up, all the false promises that I gave them, you know, tomorrow, 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 never showing up, you know, ask me later, maybe later, and you know, always the false promises. And it talks about that in here too, you know, in the eighth step about false promises and you know, how sometimes when we make amends to people, they're not real receptive of it, you know, because we forget about all those false promises that we gave them before, you know, and it's not just about saying I'm sorry today, right? It's about putting some action behind it and changing my ways. And like I've done some things up here in recovery too, that like I had to go through extreme pain, right? Like I didn't have to, but I guess I had to get where I'm at today with it, you know. But like my husband, for one, when I'm having a bad day or something, like they say that we harm the ones that are closest to us, you know, that love us the most. And I truly believe that, because if I'm having a bad day, like I could come so out the side of my neck on my husband, and all he wants to do is love me unconditionally, you know. He wants nothing but the best for me. He shows up for me and my friends in Narcotics Anonymous, like, without a second thought, you know, and I'm so quick at coming out the side of my neck just because maybe he forgot to make a phone call, you know, and instead of just saying, okay, well, you know, make sure you do it tomorrow, like, I gotta blow it up, like, as if he didn't do something that was going to cost us our home or something, you know what I mean? Like, it was just, like, I know how to magnify things, like, and I'm so grateful to this process because, like, I don't do it so often. I don't live life perfectly, you know, and I'm glad that I don't have to, but I am getting better a little bit at each day as I come. You know, it says in here that I have to get honest with myself, so that's what I did. It says in here that I have to find the courage, right, believe that the God of my understanding is not going to give me any more than I can handle, and that no matter what I'm doing, like, it's okay, and my higher power is with me, right? It tells me in here that I got to become willing to make amends to these people, and some of the people that I need to share with you are, like, people who, like, molested me, because it's really about what I've done to others and not what others have done to me. And no, them molesting me is not right, right? But it's also not right for me to say when, you know, to my mother, who is married to this man, that when this guy dies, I'm going to go to his funeral and I'm going to spit in his face, you know, say things because, like, hurt people, and I was very hurt, right? So, like, I didn't realize that me saying that to her was hurting her, and that's where it talks about in here, like, when we say things, when we do things, we don't realize how far the pain branches out to other people, not just the people that we're harming directly, but indirectly, right? Like, using with my children, right? It wasn't just harming me, it wasn't just harming them, but I truly believe that if my two oldest kids didn't find recovery, it would have affected their... As a matter of fact, my oldest son has a 12-year-old daughter that it affected greatly, because that's what he knew. He knew not how to show up for his kids because his mother didn't show up for him. His father was a great provider, but he was never around. You know, that's all he was, a great provider. So, and when he was, he drank all the time, and we used all the time, and he would beat him, and he would treat this child with cruelty, you know what I mean? And I had such fear of the abuse that I got from him that I allowed it because I didn't know what to do either. And, you know, so, you know, my son is 34. He just got out of prison doing a 4-year bid in September, right? And he's been in and out of institutions since he's 12 years old due to a direct result of this disease, you know, and how he was brought up. And you know, so, like, our actions taught him that's what he knew. And he took those actions and he placed them upon his children, you know. And so he never showed up for his daughter. And today he does, you know, thank God. But it's only through me staying in this process and being the example, no matter what, you know, no matter what they were doing in their process, just me doing what I needed to do, and they got here, you know what I mean? And, you know, it says in here that getting the willingness to make the amends to all the people that I've harmed was tough, too, because, like I said, you know, people did me great harm, but I had to make amends to some of those people, for my actions towards them, you know, whether it be me spewing words out or damaging their property or them or their families or, you know, it doesn't matter. But and I couldn't understand that concept at first. I was like, what do you mean I got to say I'm sorry to somebody who did that to me? Are you serious? Like, you know what I mean? Like, really? I remember having that great feeling of, like, really? You know, that's all I could say at that time was, like, really? And then as I started doing some more work and getting deeper into the step work, I understood why I needed to do that, you know. And it still doesn't, like I said, I had to come to the concept that me making amends to them, right, doesn't excuse their actions towards me or what they did to me. It just means that, like, I did my part. I'm apologizing and making amends for anything that I did. And that's where, and I was able to move forward, right? I was able to move forward. Like, I wasn't stuck in the past anymore with all the molestation that was going on with me and stuff like that, you know? Same thing with my son, Harry. Like, once I was able to make that amends, like, I was able to move forward and focus on my children today and my grandchildren today, you know? Feel better about myself. It helped me feel better about myself. Oh, my goodness. You know, it says in there, what are the other... It says courage, willingness, and then what is? I get all twisted up here. You know, I get so nervous because I always think that I don't have anything to say or share because that's what my disease wants me to believe, and sometimes it almost has me believing that, you know, but I'm here for a reason, right? But. The eighth step for me was very, very deep. It was very freeing. It allowed me to see my part and get out of the victimization, the victim, that would probably be the better word, like the victim state of it. Like, I shared a little bit before that I had an abusive marriage on my first marriage, you know, and for a long time I lived as the victim, you know, woe is me, why would God do this, if there was a God, why am I getting beat every day, you know, and this, that, and the other thing. When I started doing my step work, and I was talking to somebody before this, and I came to the realization, right, that the first day that I let my husband back into the house after he physically abused me, I was no longer a victim, I actually became his volunteer, and through that process, I'm realizing today, right, that, like, I kept him a victim because I kept taking him back. And he didn't, you know, he was sick, too. He was sick, too. And you know, like, that was the hardest thing for me was admitting that I wasn't a victim, you know, because, like, 12 years of beatings and I'm thinking, what in the hell? You know, I would say, you know, I stay home every day, I take care of your kids, I make sure you have your dinner, clean your house, you know, why are you doing this, this, that, and the other thing. Well, he was sick, you know, and he didn't know how to stop, and that's what he's seen growing up. You know, I became, when I married my husband, I became the person that I despised the most, which was my mother, because she would have all these abusive men in her life, and I would watch her be battered, and again, you know, like, through that process, like, I became harm, right? Because, like, I lived what she lived, you know? And I'm hoping that, like, the cycle's broke here because I would really hate to see my daughter be abused in that manner. I really would hate to see that happen, or my granddaughters, you know, be abused in that manner. And vice versa, you know? Like, I became very volatile through that relationship, and I dragged that into my second marriage, like I said, right? And so, like, because of that marriage, like, I caused harm to my second husband who wants nothing but the best for me, but because I can't let go of some of this, I drag it into this, and I bring it in front, you know? And so I'm always somehow saying I'm sorry to my husband, but what I'm learning today is that, like, the literature says that we do not repeat the same things over and over and over again. And so that's the process that I'm in now, is learning how not to do the same thing over and over and over again. Like saying I'm sorry and then tomorrow doing the same thing again. You know, saying I'm sorry to you now and then 10 minutes later, like, be coming out the side of my neck again because, like, the tractor trailer broke down. You know what I mean? And all of which he has no control over. But because he's the driver of the truck, my disease uses that. And, like, sometimes it just comes out. You know, and I'm so sick, and I twist him up, you know, and he's got to go out there and drive, you know. So I'm becoming more aware of my patterns, my behaviors, my defects, and and through the principles of step eight, I'm learning how to take those defects and turn them into spiritual principles, you know, and treat people the way I want to be treated, right? That's hard for me because a good example is like leaving my first husband and being abused for so long, getting into a second relationship and believing that I should be treated like a queen because like I lived like that for so long, you know, and it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way, you know, and so sometimes I get a little irritated over it, but I call my sponsor, you know, and I do some step work and I find my part in it and I take personal responsibility for my part. Nobody else is, just mine. And I make my amends when I need to, and I keep it moving, and I keep it moving, you know. I don't know what else to share, you know, on step eight, other than I just know that I'm a better person today. Like, I know how to love somebody. I know how to allow somebody else to love me today through this process, through doing an eight-step list. I'm able to go back and fix some of the wreckage that I've caused in my life and in many other people's lives, and I would never have had that opportunity had I not come in here and did some work, you know what I mean? I would not have had that opportunity if I at first didn't admit that I was an addict and I needed help, you know, that I was sick and I needed help. And so I just keep coming back one day at a time. I'm just going to keep making my amends as they go on. I'm going to keep trying to gain some awareness in this process. It says in here that sometimes we hurt people through things that we say unintentionally. It says in here whether we do it intentionally or unintentionally, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how we harm them, but we need to make amends when it happens. And then we need to learn how not to do it again, you know, and then not do it again. So that's pretty much all I really had to share on the eighth step. I hope I shared something. I don't know. The eighth tradition, it says that NA is non-professional, and it should be non-professional. You know, like it has some principles in there of humility, you know, like first the steps, you know, the steps in my life are like for me, you know, for me to stay alive and free, and the traditions are for the group and for the fellowship to stay alive and free, you know, and so like on a group level, what that means is like the group with humility, the group got to realize like when they can't do what needs to be done, you know, and then, like, basically what we learn, you know, to say that we need help, but we need outside help because we can't do what it is that needs to be done. And we don't play the roles, like it says in there, anonymity is another spiritual principle in both steps and tradition, and that's, like, where the, you know, nobody in the group, because like maybe because I have an accounting degree back here means that like I could go ahead and take on a group audit of some sort, you know what I mean? But it does say that if there is an NA member, which would be called a special worker, you know, that we would pay them to do what we would pay somebody outside to do if they're willing to do it. You know, so anonymity is pretty much in, you know, being the same. All being the same, not anybody being any better or less than, you know, and then prudence, you know, is what the group getting ready to do, prudent to what the circumstances or what's going on, you know, and humility, integrity, you know, is another one. Just knowing what we have to do, why we have to do it, and how are we going to do it, you know, and that's how I keep it up there and balance to the best of my ability. But I've learned a lot of my traditions through breaking them, not because I intentionally break them, but because I do, and people bring it to my attention, and I'm grateful for that. You know, they say that we are each other's eyes and ears, and I'm grateful for that. I remember bringing in, well, it doesn't matter because it's not part of this tradition, but I learned how to, most of my traditions through breaking them, and it wasn't because I wanted to break them. It was just because I was going about doing what I normally do, which sometimes isn't normal, and people bringing it to my attention and saying, Hope, you know, like, you know, you're doing this, and it's breaking the tradition, and this is why. They don't just say that you're breaking a tradition, you're an asshole. They just say, you know, you're breaking the tradition, and this is why. So they explain it, and it's great, because I need that. I need that. I don't know how to do this by myself. But, you know, just if you're new, keep coming back. You know, if you're not, keep coming back anyway, because we need you. I need you. I'm grateful for this process, and I'm just going to keep coming back and not use no matter what. My name is Hope. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, I'd like to thank Hope. And now at this time, we have Dan from the primary purpose of the group of the WE area of NA.
Hi, well, my name's Dan. I'm an addict.
Dan.
I'm grateful to be alive today. I'm grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I want to thank the retreat committee for asking me. I want to thank Hope for sharing in front of me. You know, they asked me to come up and speak on the eighth tradition and the eighth step today. And, you know, that, like, I hope, you know, with the eighth step, you know, it takes a lot of courage, you know, it takes a lot of humility, a lot of honesty, a lot of God, you know, to make that list, to be somewhat fearless. And, you know, with the eighth tradition, I was sitting there thinking, you know, like, I remember getting here and, you know, right now I'm sponsoring a guy that's sort of, you know, like, but it's one of them guys that like, he just got here, man. Like, he ran into somebody and they said, go here, right? But he ain't a dude that's been through treatment or any of that usual shit, you know, that the average bear story here. And I was thinking, you know, when I first got here, like, that stuff made no freaking sense to me. NA should be forever non-professional, but our service centers employ special workers. What in the hell does that mean? You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Maybe I'm wrong. I just come off the dope house, man. What in the hell does that mean? You know, I didn't know what resentment meant. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I didn't know what that word meant, man. Like, you know, when I got here, people be talking about resentment. Like, what's that? And so the eighth tradition, you know, it talks about, and when it talks about that, you know, and the principles of the eighth step and the eighth tradition going together, you know, about integrity, man. Like, what that means is, like, our message is sufficient, man. That's what it means. Like, we are sufficient, man. If you want to stop using drugs, you know, if you want to stop doing that, if you want to find a new way to live, this may be the camp for you, man. It's been the camp for me. It's been the camp for a lot of people, you know what I mean? And it works. You know what I mean? It works 100% of the time for 100% of the people, man, that surrender, you know, and apply these principles, you know, and don't take nothing, you know. And it works, man. So that's a lot about what that tradition talks about, especially with integrity, man. That, whew! But that, you know, that's what the biggest thing for me is, man. That this program works, just like it did for Dude. You know, he ran into some girl he went to college with. He says, I want to quit shooting dope. Go here, man. Go here. Go here to this, go to this meeting in this church and look for this cat. You know what I mean? Our message works, man. Our message works. But there are certain things we can't do. You know what I mean? Like we got to have special workers, man. And probably the greatest case of that is if you're from this region, the tri-state region, you go to Homestead, 8th Avenue in Homestead, there's a thing called the Regional Service Office. And there's people down there that shuck their literature out of there, right? And we pay special workers to be there and run the register, make sure the count's right, right, and all that. Make sure the joint's locked up, it ain't robbed, all that stuff. We pay them people, man. You know, like we can't, that's a service that we need to provide, that we need to pay for, you know. But there's a lot of stuff, man, that we do ourselves here, man. You know, and that's what the eighth tradition talks about. But like I said, I didn't understand any. That was, you know, I was freaking clueless when I got here, man. You know what I mean? I was freaking clueless. And I understand. And that's what it talks about. It talks about integrity. It talks about humility. It talks about anonymity. I don't need to be in here selling no goddamn home improvement, real estate, insurance, lawyer services. Whatever, my body, whatever, man. Like, that anonymity. Check your hat at the door, man. Check your hat at the door, you know? Check your degrees at the door. Check the alphabet at the door, man. You know, we're addicts. We're addicts. And that's why our program works, man. That's why it works. You know what I mean? We don't need special places, special people. We don't got counselors, lawyers, none of that, man. It's just one addict, man. You know, one addict helping another. I can come in here and get freed up, man. I was sitting around last night, man, with some people, and I'm thinking, you know, I got a dozen people that I'm sitting around here that I could get freed up, man. You know what I mean? Like, I could get with some people and say, hey, you know what, man? I'm out of my freaking mind. And they understand. They don't look at me like I'm out, you know. They understand, you know, how we get caught up in stuff in here, man. You know, and so that's what I know about that tradition, man. And as long as we stay that way, you know, and that's hard. You know, we got to go back to the groups that decide, hey, you know what, we can't do this. The groups or the areas or the region can't do this. We need to hire somebody to do this. You know what? We need to get an insurance agent to pay the insurance for, you know, for this facility. You know what I'm saying? That's stuff we need to do. But a lot of stuff we can do here, man. You know, and we need to keep doing it. You know, one of them is writing our damn literature. You know what I mean? Not inputting it. You know, not having somebody else write it, and we say, oh, yeah, well, I sort of like that. We need to start writing it again, man. Our literature. You know, that's why the triangle of self-obsession, that's why everybody loves that IP. I've never met anybody in NA that don't love that IP. I'm serious, man. I've never met a person yet that says, I can't relate to that IP. Because that was written by an addict that was jammed up one day, man. Jammed up. And he just wrote it. People were like, oh, man, we got to print that. You know what I mean? And we need to keep doing that, man. We need to be real careful what we put our name on, man. You know what I'm saying? Real careful. You know, because there's a lot of people who want to ride our coattails. You know what I'm saying? Because our program does work. Because you don't need no money here. You know what I mean? You don't got no presents, no promises. You know what I'm saying? You don't need an access card to come in this camp. You just need a desire, man. You know, and there's a lot of people who want to ride our coattails. A lot of people want us in their facilities. You know what I mean? And we got to be real careful about our message and what we do. And that's where prudence comes in. You know, and I didn't understand any of that, man. I'm a big fan of a dictionary. Some of these guys heard my sponsee speak up here yesterday. He would tell you, because I tell him, I said, I need you to get a dictionary and look this up, because I didn't know what derelict meant. I didn't know that. I didn't know what prudence meant. I didn't know any of that, man. You know what I mean? I'm not dumb, but I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what honesty meant, man, when I got here. I didn't know nothing about that, man. And I'm a dude that went back out and used after being here for a while, you know. So I'm real vigilant today, man. I know what that word means, you know. But the eighth tradition, you know, they're all important, man. All the traditions are important. And Rich, when Rich got a hold of me about this, I was like, oh, man, couldn't he tell me something like easy, like 3 or 5, 7, you know, 8, you know. But 8's easy, too. It's real easy, man. You know, there ain't no big I's or little U's here. We're all addicts, man. You know what I mean? We're all addicts. We're all here to help each other, man. That's the bottom line. You know what I mean? Non-professional. Forever. Should remain forever. Forever non-professional. Not for the first 20 years or 30 years or 40 years. You know what I mean? Forever non-professional, man. But, you know, we can help. We can get some people to help us with some stuff we can't do. I ain't going to get too much more into 8, man, because she covered it great, man. It just takes, you had to get with God, man. God and people, man. Write it down. I did it. It's just writing it down. It's just, listen, I'm like everybody else here. Before I ever even picked up drugs, my mom said, if you tell me the truth, I won't beat your ass. Right? I got my ass beat. So I'd rather get my ass beat than tell the truth. You know what I mean? And you hear that a lot coming here, you know. don't take nothing, go to meetings, tell the truth. Well, I was the type of joker who'd rather get my ass beat and tell the truth. And that was way before I started getting high. So, you know, that's what it's about. The truth's the truth, man. And I just had to write it down, look at it, see it for what it was, and then become willing to make those amends, man. And you know, I always thought the hardest ones were going to be, you know, like the money, this, that. The hardest ones were like the shit that I stole from my family that I can't pay back. And that's why I got to keep coming here, man. Because I'm a dude to those. You know what I mean? I'm a joker to those. You know? Like, I stole a lot of sleep off my mother. I stole a lot of sleep off her. A lot of nights with the fire whistle blowing. You know what I mean? So, that's how that goes, you know? The immense part of that is, like, when I'm asked to do something, I do it here, man. And this is my squad. This is the camp God put me in. You know what I mean? This is my team. You know, the Steelers are my team. I don't go play for the goddamn Cowboys. You know what I mean? I show up and lay truck. I don't got to go nowhere else. Our message is sufficient. It works 100% of the time for 100% of the people. That's all I got. Thanks.
Again, I'm an addict named Matt, and we have the reading of just for today, but I'd like to thank both the speakers for coming up today.
I'm John, I'm an addict.
Just for the day, tell yourself, just for the day, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. So, just for the day, I will have faith in someone in NA. Who believes in me wants to help me in my recovery. Just for the day, I'll have a program. I'll try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for the day, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for the day, I'll be unafraid. My thoughts will be in my new associations, people who are not using, who have found a new way of life. As long as I follow that way, nothing to fear.
Yeah, thank you.